This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your Rock Nation bat mitzvah of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Sometimes you gotta close the door to open a window.
Ooh, it's punchy times. It's the Monday after the Grammys, where it's still Sunday late night. It's Grammys Uncut hours here in the podcast studio. The whole gang is here. First of all, big gang today for the podcast. Joe Coscarelli's here.
Hello.
Karen Gans is here.
Hello.
Karen Gans, I want you to know that you worked very hard yesterday, and we both respect and pity the work that you did.
Thank you.
John Perales is here.
I'm here.
And browbeaten by myself about 3 hours ago and here to defend himself, Wesley Morris, New York Times critic at large, is here.
Oh, man.
Good hat, first of all.
Thank you. What's
up with the hat?
Hi, everybody. Whenever you see me wear a hat, this is like, hello, America. Hello, world.
Yeah, but this is global. Podcast is global. Shouts to our friends in Brazil.
Oh, yeah. Come to Brazil.
Yeah, come to Brazil.
Oh.
Yeah, we got shouts to all Brazilian massive.
I shall.
MC Bin Laden, MC Pikachu, all of them.
Anyway, if I'm wearing a hat, I just didn't deal with my hair.
No, but like, what is it? Does it have a name?
The hat? Oh, it's some German company.
Light flex. Also here on the pod today, Dunkin' Donuts Munchkins.
Fresh.
Joe, when did you go to bed last night?
I think I probably went to bed before most of you guys. I got home probably like between 1 and 2. And I watched a little British Bake Off to take my mind off of things. Mm-hmm. And I think I probably fell asleep like 2:15.
Okay.
And you?
No, Karen. I gotta go last.
You gotta eat the munchkin that's
first
in your mouth.
I go last. Right.
Karen Gans, what time did you go to bed last night?
I know when Karen went to bed last night.
John knows when I went to bed because I went to bed at like 3:30 and I emailed him. And then he texted me at 3:41 and said, you should go to bed.
So the takeaway is clearly I was still up. So anyway, John Perales, when did you go to bed?
Actually, you might have had an auto send on your email.
All texts from me are algo. They're all algorithmic. I don't actually talk to any of y'all.
No, but I was actually in the middle. I'd say about 3:20.
Okay.
Oh, my Lord.
Wesley, I know you weren't formally
on the one person here who didn't have anything to do.
You look well-rested. You're the only well-rested person at this table.
I don't know what to say. I did not go to bed until about 1:30, but that's because I was watching tennis.
Did you do like a full skincare routine before bed or no?
I did that like at about 11 something.
Is this where I get to say, where I get to boast of winning?
Yes.
I get to win?
Yeah.
I probably went to bed at around 5:30 and I probably didn't fall asleep till after 6. And then I woke up to edits with Karen this morning at around 10:20 or 10:25.
What did you write last night, John?
So we all wrote our bests and worsts, but crucially, and you'll forgive each of us if we're a little bit not pinpoint accurate today because it's moving a little bit slow.
No fact checking episode.
Seriously. Just,
this is all feelings.
That's right. It's just vibes. It's just a vibes cast.
A lot of feelings.
A lot of vibes cast. So I have this ability that I've developed that I can tune out a bad Grammy. I can watch it and yet tune it out, which is basically what happened the entire third hour of the Grammys yesterday. But what that did is it kind of like enhanced for me all these moments that maybe if you were to average out the time of the show, maybe only took up 15 to 20% of the actual show. But to me, felt really outsized. So we're talking Billie Eilish stuff, Lil Nas X, Tyler, obviously, which we opened the show with, the Tyler, the Creator Earthquake performance. And there was a visual aspect to that. I don't know if you saw any of the kind of like panning shots of the crowd, mm-hmm. but like everybody is in black or gray or navy. And then you see Billie Eilish in her neon green and Lil Nas X in his fuchsia dominatrix Versace
cowboy.
Outfit. Cowboy. Dominatrix cowboy Versace yeah. outfit. And I thought that that was actually a really apt representation of what was happening on stage as well. So I wrote a piece about, you know, we complain about the Grammys pissing off all of our favorite superstars. Like, oh, let's give Drake an award, but it's like kind of in the rap category. It's not a rap song. And like, oh, Frank Ocean doesn't even want to bother submitting his album for consideration because he knows that it's not going to go his way or they're not going to treat it seriously. So you have this entire generation of stars who are basically like, yeah, nah. They're just like opting out of the Grammys.
We've done this in a few places, but seeing the full list together in your piece today, it's like, it's pretty striking, right?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I
no Beyonce, no Jay-Z, no Drake,
no Kendrick, no Frank,
no Justin Bieber, no Taylor, Ed Sheeran, no Taylor Swift.
And not all of those people have been formally alienated by the Grammys. Obviously, people don't show up a lot of times in off years. There's a variety of reasons you might not go to the Grammys.
If I were Ed Sheeran, I wouldn't go anywhere near the Grammys ever the F again.
That's a very hard pivot.
Sorry, I'm Taylor Swift
is
number two on
that list. Are you sure
that he
didn't go dressed as Louis Capaldi though?
Don't do that to Ed. Don't do that
to Louis.
Well, take your pick. Don't do it to either one of them.
Oh my God.
My only red carpet commentary from last night was that Louis Capaldi
dresses like you.
Makes no, wow. I think he was wearing a white t-shirt.
Spiritually.
No, I was gonna say Louis Capaldi makes Ed Sheeran look like Harry Styles. Which is like it's unbelievable, really.
In
shout out to
Louis
all my
Capaldi,
slobs
can I
out
just
here.
Do this?
Yeah.
Just a quick.
Well, I will say one of my favorite moments from the pre-show was watching him talk to Sharon Osbourne.
Oh God, yeah.
She is really wonderful as a person talking to human beings. I just let her do all the award shows. CBS needs to get another award show to let Sharon.
She was doing like daughtering auntie.
Drawing unusual conclusions. Sharon Osbourne, when she announced the best rap performance,
yeah.
or
oh, yeah.
Lil Baby, gonna
just the hard
Bloody Rich.
Shout out to the cameraman, just the hard hold on Lil Baby yeah. and Gunna as yeah. they awkwardly looked at each other, like how long is it going to take her to say our name?
Are we allowed to laugh?
And like, who is this woman? They're like 20 years old. They've never seen Sharon Osbourne in their lives.
They never seen the TV show. They never. So how did we end up? Oh, by how late I was up. So anyway, I went to bed after 6. I woke up at around 10:20. So I'm a little punchy. Point being, I wrote that notebook because it was a big night for people who were young at the Grammys. And having written a notebook 36 hours earlier, basically being like, the Grammys can't be trusted, everyone is washed, and everyone is abusing their power, et cetera, and et cetera. It was a low-key, refreshing thing to watch a show where I was like, huh, that is kind of what contemporary pop sounds like now. This Lizzo is important. Billie Eilish, you know, I think, is espousing traditional values, but is still very current. And, you know, Lil Nas X, the mayhem of that performance, it all felt very of the now. And that was a refreshing thing to see in between the weird Camila Cabello serenading her father.
Wait, I'm sorry. Weird?
We got to get back to that.
Okay.
We'll pause that for 1 second. But wait.
Y'all know what I'm talking about.
But John Perales, just before we went upstairs to record this, said something which I hadn't thought about, which is, was the part of the Grammys that you're describing, was that the Deb Dugan Grammy Awards?
Obviously, she had to have some hand in crafting the show. It's not like they did it in the tumultuous days after they canned her.
Right. So this was the new CEO of the Recording Academy.
Yeah, who used to work for Bono's Red charity organization.
Brought in to sort of revamp the Grammys after
right.
Neil Portnow's.
She had a diversity task force. I have the feeling she was trying to do good things, and she probably got them to book some people with more forward-looking and inclusive ideas than the previous regime.
Right. So in the last week or so, she's been put on leave from her brand new job. She's been accused of bullying a coworker, an executive assistant, and then obviously she
was also Neil Portnow's assistant. Who,
yes, she was an inherited assistant.
Wait, really?
Can I just? Here's the thing: I am not a human resources professional. I want to start by saying that, but I will say this: if you take a job. And as part of that job, you have to take the previous person.
It was temporary.
Stop it.
You know, it's actually kind of how the Grammy Awards work, though. Yeah. It's like, you know, if you want to sing in harmony, you have to go on stage alongside the Beach Boys.
It's like, that's how they take the last guy's assistant.
Are Boys to Men now the newbie? Are they the Beach Boys of this situation?
They will be. When they had to learn the earthquake melodies? Like, what's going on here?
Well, Wanye was feeling it. Wanye was 100,000 percent in.
Deb Dugan, she files, a discrimination claim basically against the Grammys, sort of laying out all their dirty laundry about how the nominations process is a little screwy. She says she was sexually harassed by Joel Katz, the lawyer for the Academy.
That story is ridiculous.
Yeah, and also she shines light on something that had been buried, which is an allegation of rape against Neil Portnow.
Yes, which he denies.
And Katz denies too.
Katz, everybody in the Recording Academy denies all of her claims. But part of what she said in her lawsuit was that upon taking the job, one of the first things she did was reach out to all these people who feel like they've been wronged by the Grammys in recent years. She specifically names Rihanna's camp, I think, and Kendrick Lamar's camp as people that she sort of did some outreach to as the new CEO. So
did Kendrick Lamar performed with Imagine Dragons at the Grammys once?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That is no one's.
Well. That was a great performance.
Oh, thank you, Karen. Thank you, Karen.
Here for you, Wesley.
Thank you, Karen.
Sharing a mic with Joe, but I'm here for this.
How convenient that there is a book here called Familiar Quotations. Is it full of Karen Gans defending Imagine Dragons? Let's see.
I am not like an Imagine Dragons stan, but believe it.
That was great.
Sorry. It's a good song.
It also has you defending 21 Pilots. I'm sorry.
That's a great band.
Kendrick later performed with U2.
Yep.
He's done a lot for the Grammys, and they have not done a lot for him, which is why I think he was not there last night. He didn't have anything.
But the year he opened the Grammys was as good as Tyler's performance this year.
I was going to say, that's probably that was the precursor for Tyler's performance, and also what Gary Clark Jr. was trying to do. Maybe.
Oh, we're going we'll get there. Oh, no, we're going to get. Oh, my God. I can't believe you invoked that name, and now I have to think about Gary Clark Jr. for the 30 minutes.
Oh, my God. Can we just move in the direction this is supposed to go?
Billie Eilish won 5 Grammys.
Okay.
Finish the Deb Dugan stuff.
Yeah, I want to hear John explicate his point. Yeah.
So the idea is that, you know, maybe Deb Dugan was trying to move the Grammys into the 21st century.
Those are also, these people are also the most nominated people. I mean, it's not like,
you know,
Herbie Hancock got 10 nominations but didn't perform.
So this was supposed to be a sort of new day for the Grammy Awards.
But also Ken Ehrlich's final show. Because it was a year in flux, because while it was Deborah Dugan's first year, but it was also Ken Ehrlich's last year. He's been producing the show for 40 years. He's the one who's responsible for those trademark, as John tried to put a little trademark sign in our copy today, Grammy moments.
Did I not
succeed? I think we succeeded online. I'm not sure what happened in print.
God damn it.
Yes. But anyway, a Grammy moment. You're familiar with these where they take a cross-generational artist, so they'll take a young artist and an older artist and make them play something ridiculous.
Oh, God.
Or they can be from the same generation.
Yes, they can also be from the same
generation. Could be Imagine Dragons and Kendrick Lamar.
It's true. That was a Grammy moment.
Can I give you my lengthy generational perspective on this?
Yes.
The Grammys started as the older generation tut-tutting the rock and rollers, saying Henry Mancini is real music. Your Rolling Stones are not real music. Okay? Then the baby boomers come in.
Can we play some Henry Mancini? Just Pedro, play any Henry Mancini
Pink
song
Panther
right
Club.
Now.
Okay, but then the baby boomers come in and like, we're going to do it right. You know, we have the true rock and roll rebel spirit.
What years would you say those were?
Well, I mean, the 50s was the, I don't know, lamest generation. And then
so late 50s to late 60s.
Well, this is the 62nd annual Grammys. This is 2020.
Right.
So 1958.
I mean, it was like a rebuke to rock and roll in 1958, basically.
Nice.
In come the baby boomers, and we're going to do it right. We have the rebel spirit. We've smoked marijuana, whatever. The boomers have learned music by apprenticeship, okay? You know, you buy the records, you learn how to play the licks, you idolize the old blues man or the Rolling Stones or whatever. You learn in an oral tradition. Along comes hip-hop, and hip-hop is like you sample, right? You dig in the crates. You don't have to meet the person. You don't even have to know any context whatsoever. And Ken Ehrlich is in the boomer generation of apprenticeship, and apprenticeship is the Grammy moment. Of course you would want to sing with the Beach Boys because you learn from them and they're your idols. But as the years go by, they start smashing together people who have never heard of the people they supposedly idolize. And then the Grammy moments turn ludicrous.
And also, to be fair, and from a hip-hop perspective, there isn't that much hip-hop on the Grammys, broadly speaking, in terms of the presentation of the categories or the performances themselves. So I think part of what you're seeing is kind of like biases.
Well, I mean, you see baby boomers who hate hip-hop. It's like baby boomers who are still saying, is that stuff music?
And I didn't put this in my piece, at least I don't think I did. I didn't sleep a lot. But it's important to remember the Grammys air on CBS. CBS is the broadcast network with the oldest audience. So if you think of this not as music's biggest night, if you think of it not as an award show for the music business, if you think of it as a 3.5 hour televised concert.
Four.
4 26/2 hour concert. Why wouldn't it skew old? Because the type of people who ordinarily watch CBS tend to skew old.
I said this in the office as we were watching last night, but I would have loved to watch whatever the television equivalent of Chartbeat is, you know, which shows sort of how much traffic something is getting online at any given moment. I would have wanted to watch the swan dive of people changing the channel as Tyler was literally shaking their television sets.
It's on CBS. Why wouldn't it be a show for older viewers with narrow taste?
Well, because part of the reason why they put younger people on television is to knock their demo down, which is much more coveted in terms of advertising. So it could be CBS's night to actually like pull in the 18 to 34s.
I think, you know, right before we came in to record this, John Koblen, one of our media reporters, tweeted that Grammy's ratings were down, I think, 5% this year from last year to like 18.7 million or something, right? Which still makes them the second most popular award show behind the Oscars, slightly above the Golden Globes. But I think my main takeaway from this show last night was that it was whiplash, it was tug of war between generations, between styles, and you had
so— And between visions for what the show could and should be.
Yes, so you have Camila doing a song for her father, which—
Why are you putting it even that way?
So you're saying you don't want to listen to a little bit of that?
No.
You have Aerosmith.
Executive order.
And doing Run a song DMC. With their father.
You have Icing the Body Electric grand finale for Kenner, like we'll get to that. But then you have Tyler the Creator.
Boy,
you have
Lang Lang out here killing it.
You have Rosalia performing. You have, you know, this Nipsey Hussle tribute with Roddy Ricch and YG and DJ Khaled. Like you have this Lil Nas X sort of meme extravaganza. Oof. You know, and then right in the middle of the two generations, you have Billie Eilish, who is
the youngest person in the house.
The youngest person in the house.
But oldest spirit.
Yes, with an old spirit. Yes. And, you know, so she won all four of the top categories, only the second person ever
because
to do that.
Her music is extremely legible to older people who are familiar with older songcraft like Tony Bennett.
Which you saw specifically in her song choice. She performs When the Party's Over, ballad from her album, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? And this, to me, is one of the strongest Billie Eilish songs, but it's also one of the most traditional.
Yes.
And it only gets its subversive power, which is her whole value add to the pop ecosystem, when you watch the music video in which she's bleeding black from her face.
Yes.
Well, there's also all of the weird vocal effects that are on the actual recording, which disappear on the Grammys.
But on the Grammys, and Wesley, you and I were talking about this, you know, she performs the song with her brother Phineas, very straightforward, maybe a little bit of children's choir in the background, but that didn't really go anywhere. And then it gets quiet and you think like, okay, what's she going to do to like mess things up?
Yep.
Never and then happened. That was it.
And it ends, yep.
And, you know, we don't know if that was Ken Ehrlich's choice that she's going to perform the song, if that was what they wanted to do.
I mean, my sense is that Ehrlich tends to push people towards songs like that, especially
towards ballads.
Especially artists who might not translate to a more traditional audience.
So let's, I mean, we should listen to a little bit of that performance.
I would love to listen to Billie Eilish.
You say that, but the first thing my mother said to me this morning was, you like that Billie Eilish? It's not
translating. That's because your mom is like avant-garde.
No.
Your mom is like in the Boca Raton avant-garde.
I would say she has traditional tastes.
And she was not banging with Billie Eilish?
No.
I do hear what John is saying because most of my Billie Eilish experiences, I mean, I've seen the music videos. I'd never really truly seen her live.
She's very good live.
But in a lot of my experience of her is from our coverage of her and my listening to the album and seeing the videos. I have never seen her as a live presence, just as a human being. I didn't know what her speaking voice sounded like. And so I was in that moment last night on what I only can describe as the Adele in the round. I know other people have used it before, but I only associate it with Adele. And the degree of difficulty for singing the way she sings, to be that legible in her singing and to convey emotion, to be clear, there's so much craft involved in her vocal delivery that I did not feel like I was looking at an 18-year-old sing. I felt like I was watching a much older person. And you and I, when we talked about this, Joe, I want to see some birth certificates. I want to see his, and I want to see hers.
You know they did this to Lord, too.
Believe
they did this to Lord. They tried to find her birth certificate, and she was not lying.
there's such an oldness to them.
Wesley, she's such a teen. You have to watch. I spent last weekend with friends. I watched
her. She loves the SoundCloud rap.
I watched her Hot Ones, and I watched her Pitchfork Over Under.
Yeah.
And she is really such good. A teen, and that
right,
end
well,
is so amazing.
The famous, is it Jimmy Kimmel? Was it who she didn't know who Bon Jovi was? Is that
Van Halen?
Van Halen, right.
Who can relate?
But the point is, I mean, John is the thing that John is sensing, and I know you feel this way too, Joe. I do feel like there is this amazing thing about her. It's going to be very fun to like watch her turn into whatever she's going to turn into. And does she do that with him, with Phineas? Or what happens when they either grow apart or they choose to work separately?
Fundamentally, Billie Eilish is not as weird as Lorde. Not that I think Lorde is weird, but like on a fundamental level, Billie Eilish aesthetically, musically, I understand personal aesthetics, yes, but musical aesthetics, I think Lorde is much more interesting and
but
much stranger.
But just compare their debuts. I totally disagree if you're comparing Pure
Billie
Heroine
Eilish
and
is much more
When We All Fall
Asleep.
I mean
Lorde as we know her now.
But you can't count Melodrama because that's her second album and Billie Eilish hasn't made her second album.
Also, she's over 20 now.
I'm like the stock market. I'm using all available information to make my assessments. For Christ's sake.
You are not thinking clearly.
I really think you overestimate how traditional Billie Eilish is. Yes, she can write a melody.
Have nobody been listening to Popcast for the last 3 months where I've been hammering away at this?
I know, we're ignoring it.
Great. Can I present an alternate theory for Billie sweeping the Grammys, which is, yes, she is traditional. I have 2 points. This was sort of my final...
She's also white.
Yes, I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there. My 1A point is the one I made before I went to sleep, which is that she is a unicorn for the music industry. Every time I've stepped foot in a label over the last year, it's just, how do we get another Billie Eilish? How is this artist like Billie Eilish? How is this rollout plan like Billie Eilish? How is this music video like Billie Eilish? Does my artist have enough mental illness to be in the Billie Eilish lane?
So
like, literally.
You basically take a bunch of suburban white girls, lock them in a room not unlike this, and force feed Lil Pump into their ears
so she
for like
is,
6 months.
Yes. So she is a commercial.
One of them will come out like Billie Eilish.
She is a commercial juggernaut. Self-made in this way that labels love. They sort of, you know, they picked her up and she was already formed. And
how
then
is
they
she
just
selling? I mean, does she
super well? Yeah, yeah. Huge. Super, I mean, she's big on every level, and that, and ultimately the Grammys are a back padding for the music industry. So, you know, it's like the Oscars. Like, if you make a lot of money, that's a lot of points in your column.
But that doesn't always
work. So, but when you take that and you combine it with the fact that she is a SoundCloud rapper, but also a white girl.
As she said, she is the first pop star of the SoundCloud rap generation.
Yes.
Like, that is very, very clear. She can do things that Juice WRLD never was able to do, that probably even Lil Peep probably would not have been able to do.
Meaning, as a matter of privilege or talent?
Both. I mean privilege.
Okay.
I mean, there are spaces that she would be allowed in that those people would not have been allowed in for a variety of reasons, but primarily
it is interesting that she travels as a tandem, right? Like, it is double the pleasure, more bang for your buck. I don't know how you want to put it. And I think I might have said this to you.
Yeah, give them a chance to vote for the whitest black thing or the blackest white thing.
Tell me the truth. Don't rig the categories and then have Kendrick not win, because you know what? I just want to know. Like, don't let Ed Sheeran not compete. Don't let Taylor not compete, so that you can create this lie about who you are as an industry. Like, they already won in real life, so let them win at your award show. You're not fooling anybody.
You think if Lover was in the Album of the Year category, it would have won?
That's a great question. I don't think so.
I was thinking about that this morning. I don't think so either.
I don't think so, but like, just, but don't let me speculate. Why leave us here, at least me, to be like, I don't know. Definitely Reputation. I mean, I think Reputation certainly would have won had it been nominated.
But I feel like, you mean because of its relationship to black music?
I'm cynical to this end. Puffy gave that speech when he accepted his governor's.
We gotta play some audio from that speech.
Our only hope. Truth be told, hip hop has never been respected by the Grammys. Black music has never been respected by the Grammys to the point that it should be. So right now, this current situation, it's not a revelation. This thing been going on. And it's not just going on in music, it's going on in film, it's going on in sports, it's going on around the world. And for years, we've allowed institutions that have never had our best interests at heart to judge us. And that stops right now.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. I developed this recipe when I was down in Georgia with my family. It stars a Korean red pepper powder called gochugaru. I love the way it blooms in the maple syrup and the rice vinegar. If you don't have gochugaru, you should totally get some. It's super versatile. It's not just that it brings heat, but fruity sweetness as well. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
Whenever people make these statements, I'm always kind of like, okay, Diddy, I hear you, but the numbers don't. And I'm like, yes, they actually do. The man came with his facts. And the people who give us our stuff, I just want to know, I want to know what they think we're supposed to believe about what they think, right? And
you are so meta.
And Wesley slept, by the way.
I genuinely have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm saying,
and you did not.
I know, but you want to make.
I think I'm right.
You want to make all this money off of, I mean, all artists, obviously, but we know hip hop and R&B are at the center of American
Absolutely.
Music. They are American music, right? So, looking at the artists who've won Album of the Year, it's either a reaction against where music actually is, right. Or it's the white person doing the blackest thing, or the not black person doing the blackest thing.
You're talking about Bruno Mars.
Right. I mean, but look what happened. They kept Ed Sheeran out of all those major categories, and what winds up—
To be fair, this year you mean?
No, last year. Previous. The year at 24 Karat Magic.
Okay, so not this year.
So
allegedly.
Right. I mean, and again. But I just feel like— We are being manipulated into thinking a problem does not exist that we all know fully, entirely, totally
exists. But who doesn't
think
the problem exists?
Well,
okay, everybody thinks the problem exists.
Can we go back to our friend Deb, who was aware that this problem existed and was trying to fix it?
Allegedly.
Okay.
Everything is alleged.
Going.
The only place
you
that you guarantee
to
know the problem exists is in the pages of the New York Times. It's the page. We know the problem exists. And anyone who reads what we say knows the problem exists. But I don't know if anybody
but
else does.
I am also for fair accounting in award shows. I don't believe that the thing that is best is ever going to win, but I want to know in the case of an industry operated
awards
operation.
Themselves?
Yeah. And so you could see that happening in the broadcast this year. And this is why I want John to keep talking about his point about the generational divide among the performers and the way the show operates.
Well, I mean, the problem with the Grammys is to get to vote, you have to have made a bunch of records. So you're already a professional in the industry. I don't know. Does Billie Eilish qualify yet? I don't know. Can
yeah,
she vote?
I think it's like 6 credits.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And that includes like executive producer, which means you're a record industry suit. You know, that doesn't
Although,
mean
like,
you're
managers
like,
and stuff don't vote.
No, it's engineers, producers, session people, musicians.
But you're already inside the club. You already have the weight of precedent on you. You're already ossified partially.
But here's my question, because in terms of who votes, and these are things we can't know the answer to, but like, does Kenny Beats vote? You know, does Cash Money AP vote? Like people who have actual credits in the last 12 to 24 months.
Can they vote or do they exercise their right to vote?
No, I think they can vote. Are they invited into the Academy? I know there's outreach to get people to sign up to become voting members. You don't automatically, it's not like you're automatically driver's license getting renewed. You have to be invited or apply to be in some form or fashion.
You have to pay dues too.
Yeah, you got to pay dues. So do they pay dues? And then do they understand that, oh, we have the authority to vote? Whereas the guy who engineered a bunch of ELO records in 1970, whatever, that guy's not doing anything else with his time but
loving Billie Eilish.
True story. Big facts.
So just a little perspective. So the last non-white artist to win Album of the Year
was non-white.
Was Bruno Mars.
Midnight Vultures right. attack. Didn't mean it.
I want to emphasize Wesley slept last night.
Okay, it was Bruno Mars. The last black artist to win was Herbie Hancock. Yep. That was more than a decade ago. The last rap artist to win Outcast. Album of the Year, and perhaps only, right? Is that, I mean,
did Lauryn Hill?
Lauryn Hill. Yeah. Who sings and raps?
Wait, Stankonia did? I mean,
Speakerbox? Speakerbox Love
Below. Yeah, okay, right. When I was a kid, you guys were all there for this, but I can
remember leaping,
my head almost hitting the ceiling in my dorm when Unforgettable won. And I'm like, what are these people doing? This is insane.
Well, I have to say, that's when they put in the special committees that have screwed everything up now.
It's just a different kind of screw up.
This is Natalie Cole singing with her father, Nat King Cole.
Camila Cabello.
Y'all, my stomach can't handle that.
Wait, was that the reference?
Unforgettable. She should have just sang Unforgettable.
Just, the creepiness factor was already too much.
Okay, wait, can we pivot a little bit? Because there is so much stuff that happened on the show
when,
that we
when
have
do
not...
we get to Gary Clark Jr.?
Oh my gosh.
I want to jump off from what we were just talking about to talk about Tyler's backstage answer.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I would like to get to the show afterwards.
We'll get to the show. And we'll get to the show via Tyler.
Do you want to talk about Tyler? Because we also have to talk about Drake, too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So Tyler won Best Rap Album for Igor.
An album I think is a solid B.
A fine album with almost no rapping on it.
Right. Yeah.
Tyler, a producer, a composer, a curator.
A fan of library music and 60s soundtracks.
Period. And he won for Igor, which is this weird concept album where he wears like a blonde bob and a suit. And I don't really know what it's about other than that.
Yeah.
But he was asked, you know, what he thought about controversies related to the Grammys. And he essentially said, you know, it felt like a backhanded compliment to win rap album, that he doesn't feel like he's making rap music. And he compared it to playing video games.
I don't think he explicitly said that he's not making rap music.
But he said he's making more than rap
music. Yeah, he has a tortured relationship to...
But these are the
music.
Struggles of all, I mean, not all black artists, but let's just stay with black artists. I mean, we had this Lizzo conversation, we all did. And I was looking at what the Grammys deem traditional in any number of genres. And like, who determines that? Like, what?
The special committee.
The special committees.
But what I'm saying is, like, why do these categories exist? Is it to give out more Grammys that nobody sees anybody get? Or is it to really honor tradition? I don't think
it's not
it
to honor
is.
Are you thinking about the R&B stuff specifically?
I'm thinking about Americana. I'm thinking about, is there a traditional country?
No, there's
what,
like
what
a
is
roots.
What is
like
their roots? Right, roots. Right, right. And I just feel
traditional
like.
Traditional blues also.
It hurts music to so deeply nicheify this stuff.
But I do think it's to honor.
On the other hand,
broadly.
Yeah, it's never going to get a chance otherwise. If you're going through the traditional Hawaiian section at your non-existent record store,
you might pick
that Grammy winner because it won a Grammy.
And that's the flip side of what Tyler was talking about, is Tyler could be the best rap album or he could be the eighth nominee in Album of the Year
and lose.
Horribly and probably not even be asked to perform like Vampire Weekend or whatever. So I don't know what's better.
With the Tyler thing, it's important to remember that this is the exact thing that Drake said last year on stage at the Grammys and had said prior to that in response to winning for Hotline Bling, which he very plainly said is not a rap song, which is accurate. But here's a good thing about Tyler. It's important to remember what Tyler has come from. A decade ago when Odd Future was starting out, they were a bunch of...
Nothing makes me feel older than that phrase.
Yes. They were a bunch of wild rapscallions, you know, if you were at that first Webster Hall studio show and saw Tyler hanging from the ceiling pipes. It's striking to see how far he has come. But he has come that far without fundamentally compromising... The music has changed quite a bit, but without compromising the kind of commitment to... the idiosyncratic self that has always been a part of the Odd Future aesthetic and principle. So I was really relieved that when he was asked that, and Tyler doesn't do a lot of press anymore. So he doesn't really get asked loads of questions all the time by a lot of journalists. So to see him in front of a room of journalists, just very frankly be like, I have wanted to win a Grammy or been chasing this for my entire life. Karen, I found that tweet that in 2010, where he had a list of goals, the first goal was win a Grammy. He's been chasing it, but also understanding the limitations of what he has been handed.
I was really struck by how good all those young people were as, like, self-presenters.
Yes, absolutely.
I felt this way about Tyler, the Creator, for, you know, since forever. But, like, watching him, as John said, like, he had such amazing stage presence last night. Like, he knew how to, like, move his body.
He's the only one who got it.
I mean, it was just, like, watching him was electrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing him be in that great piece of art direction. And to actually, when he showed up at the Grammys, I was like, oh, he's an escapee from Grand Budapest Hotel.
Exactly.
And he actually understood how to use that costume for maximal subversion. And to come out and have a 40 other bellhop, blonde wig, black men come to the stage that was such a like a psychological explosion. I don't know. I just love watching him comport himself as an artist and then win that Grammy and be an artist who can articulate himself.
Just incredibly savvy.
It just was
about not just his own art, but the system. You know, him even understanding that if he had been placed, what we were just saying before, if he had been not nominated in that category, but been in the pop category, we probably wouldn't have heard anything from Tyler last night, if we're being honest. I want to pivot to the show. And I kind of want to just do some lightning round stuff because there was a lot of madness on television, both good and bad, last night.
Great band.
So I'm just going to throw.
Madness?
Gwen Stefani says, what's up?
One step beyond.
Okay, so I'm just going to throw.
R.I.P. Gwen Stefani.
Well, yeah, that was the first one I was going to throw.
Oh, my God. Can I just say this now?
Go ahead.
I think that's Billie Eilish in, like, X number of years.
Married to Blake Shelton?
I wonder, right?
No.
This is not Wesley's only not. Bad take, so let's just speed it up so we can get to that one.
Wesley!
No, I'm just saying, I'm not.
You need more sleep.
No.
I wonder.
No. We're dropping
you
that.
You just RIP'd her.
Did you listen to the performance?
Oh, I did. I'm not supporting that. Okay.
Can you imagine a thing you want to hear less immediately after mourning the death of Kobe Bryant than a duet between Blake Shelton and Gwen Stefani?
Did they write that song live on the air?
Was it freestyle?
Yeah.
Does
that song
like the SNL sketch where they're finishing each other's sentences?
Does that song exist outside of what we saw last night?
I think it's on a record that came out this year.
I think it's on a Blake Shelton record.
Can you imagine choosing that as the second performance of the Grammy Awards?
This is the tension between Ken Ehrlich and can you please say her name?
The stand-in for Deborah Dugan.
Yes.
Or she's the stand-in for us for the new Grammys. We don't know how much she was responsible.
We don't know, but it feels...
Can I just say, in defense of Blake Shelton, Blake Shelton's extremely popular. Has been extremely popular.
We're not asking why they were on the show,
no,
John.
No, but why they were placed that high.
That's not
Gwen has like a certain amount of star power. Blake Shelton incredibly popular. It's the only representation of contemporary country music
that
on
was
the entire lineup.
That was the only one.
It's the only representation of country music.
Dan Shay won an award.
Tanya Tucker.
I don't consider that Tanya Tucker does. I mean, it's you know.
I don't consider what Blake Shelton does contemporary.
That's inaccurate.
They're also TV figures. They're TV personalities.
Yes.
It was a strange
Pedro,
spot for
Pedro, please
them.
Play 20 seconds of Ole Red in honor of Blake Shelton when he was popping.
Ole Red Kitchen, I have a little fun. Get my lantern, get my gun. Little heavy treat for the morning. Old Red got real used to seeing his lady every night. And so I kept him away for 3 or 4 days and waited till the time got right. Well, I made my run with the evening sun and I smiled when I heard him turn red out. As I was headed north to Tennessee and Old Red was headed south. Come on, somebody, why don't you run?
Just to make my point about Billie Eilish, just like I just want to clarify what I meant. I did not mean that she was going to turn into actually that. I feel like there. I would never have imagined, here's what I'll say. I would never have imagined that the woman that was in No Doubt in 1993, 4, 5 would have wound up in that dress singing that song to that person at that show in 2020.
What you're saying is that Billie Eilish could possibly be on her fifth life, her fifth public life at a certain point.
Right, and I just
also you're saying she's going to be swallowed by show business.
I wonder.
All I have to say, it's 5 words, life comes at you fast. That is all I'd say about Gwen Stefani. Since we are already in warfare mode, let's just get to it. The most volatile moment last night of the Grammy Awards was in the Google Doc with Karen Gans attempting to defend the Aerosmith Run DMC performance, which was nigh the most chaotic, the most unhinged, the most off-key performance I have seen.
What is your problem with that?
First of all, I was texting with Rob Arvilla. Shouts to Rob Arvilla.
Wonderful tweets from Rob Arvilla.
He alluded in his piece that the Grammys included the worst award show performance he had ever seen. And in his piece,
These Grammys.
I did read that. I did wonder what he was referring
to. This is what I'm saying. He didn't mention. So I texted Rob and I said, Rob.
It had to be the body electric.
That's what I assumed. No,
this is what I said. So I texted him and I was like, do you mean the closer or LOL? Do you mean Blake and Gwen? And I texted him that before I went to bed, and I woke up to a text, and the text said, Aerosmith Run DMC, apologies to Karen.
Rob.
Karen. Huh. Were you smoking last night?
No, I was in the office with Joe.
Joe, were you smoking last night?
No, sir.
Okay, I gotta be honest.
Could have been edibles.
That was okay, that's fair. Thank you, JB.
All right.
Goodman, were you vaping?
Do I have to mansplain marijuana to you?
Yes.
It would have made that performance worse.
Okay. I'm
gonna cry.
I know you worked really hard yesterday, and I'm willing to forgive one bad take.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Joe told me you were singing along, so maybe you didn't hear how bad it was.
She was singing along. And
so maybe you didn't hear. Important to be fair, context. I'm trying to give you an out here.
Important context. Karen went to Vegas very recently to see Aerosmith.
That wasn't the raison d'etre of the trip, but I did see them while I was there.
Would you have gone to Vegas during a time when you could not have seen Aerosmith?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I went and I was like, who's playing? And I was like, Aerosmith, I'd love to see that.
Said no one.
Yeah.
I wrote a very big wugwan energy.
I love to write blurbs. I believe my blurb spoke for itself, and that the point of that performance was not technical skill, because obviously that wasn't what I'm talking about here. It was madness and messiness and fun, and it was a hoot, dare I say. No?
But Karen, no. there's good sloppy no. and there's bad sloppy.
Good sloppy was Lil Nas X. Bad yes. sloppy was Aerosmith.
Also, Steven Tyler literally forcibly pulled women from the audience on stage.
It was a problematic moment.
In 2020. It's 2020. We're not doing that.
I think I'm more with Karen than not with Karen. I did not understand why they did that, because it wasn't really. I mean, whatever a Grammy moment is supposed to be, like, I didn't really feel like, I just don't know why. Because let's remember how that performance begins. It begins with Aerosmith doing Living on the Edge.
Yep.
As it's the only song they have that, I'm sure they were like, guys, what should we do? Joe Perry was like, well, we do have, like, impeachment's happening right now. What's the, like, impeachment-iest song we've got?
Yeah, no, because they did have the slides behind them.
There was this whole very forced visual presentation behind them.
I missed that.
It was really.
She was too busy singing her heart out.
The best person singing during that performance was probably you.
And Lizzo.
Fair.
Anyway, yeah. I just feel
also,
like,
we have to mention that Aerosmith won some award. Also, frankly, I'm equal opportunity here. I thought Run DMC was trash too. I thought they were, all of it was terrible.
The whole thing
was terrible. Yeah. Okay. It was off beat. It was off pitch.
Yes, okay.
It was off mood. Off cycle.
I'm granting you all this. However, did you?
What do you mean you're?
But if you looked at the crowd reaction shots, it was the happiest anybody was all night.
Those people are literally kidnapped.
Questlove? No. Lizzo was smiling.
Questlove's kidnapped in the room perspective.
Stockholm Syndrome.
I think that it was the most fun moment inside the room of the night. I thought Tyler was the best performance, but I don't know that in the room it translated, that people were like, whoa, this is a crazy thing.
That.
I thought it was really fun. It brought everyone together. We needed a moment of happiness. It was a tough Grammys. Give it to me, John. Wesley.
No, that's a great argument. And it was, I will say, like, I did not dislike it in the moment.
Were you watching it on mute?
No, I was. Well, you know what's funny, John? I did say.
Everybody getting dragged.
I did say to my friend Brett, while we were watching it, I said, Steven Tyler doesn't sound bad. Is it real? And we didn't really have an answer. But
I think it was
real. I'm sure
real
Karen does.
Because in Las Vegas, I might have noticed some lip syncing.
A little LS?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
All right, we got a couple more.
No, Pedro's literally simply.
Pedro's
you
calling
play?
It.
We have to. We have no choice.
Pedro, you can, fine. You can play this.
Wait, you're going to yeah. make
a trigger warning.
I sing the body electric.
No, no, no.
That's what
you
we're going out
it.
On.
No, no, you can play it, but I'm going to trigger warn it before you play it.
Gird your loins.
Pedro has announced that he feels it is essential that we play it so that y'all can hear it for yourselves. So I just want you to know that if you have pre-existing trauma, do not listen for the next 30 seconds.
It's really something that needs to be seen rather than heard. I'll just put that out there.
Someone received an email in the office from Wesley after a performance last night, and there was a collective gasp among the culture employees who were here.
I was not on. I just want to say I was not on this email.
I wasn't either. I only heard
I
the
only
reaction
sent it
in the
to,
room.
I sent
it was
it
an email
Karen.
Just to me. I'm sorry, Wesley. I leapt out of my seat and yelled, "Oh my God, Wesley liked the Usher Prince tribute."
And everybody gasped. Everybody, this spans generations, spans gender, spans race. Everybody
it was a granny
in the room
moment of gasping. Ken Ehrlich produced the gasp.
What did you like about Usher doing Prince?
Was it the pants or the jacket?
And tell the truth. Lead with the main thing, because I thought your answer was compelling when I asked you earlier.
We are in the middle of a major sex crisis.
Tell that to Louis Capaldi.
Louis Capaldi is the reason for our sex crisis.
That is a breakup song, Joe.
And the thing that is missing from pretty much all popular music right now is somebody who either has had sex, knows how to have sex, wants to have sex, is here for sex, or can
just,
spell sex.
Can I just, no, no, no.
And do we need to play cash for Wesley?
Yeah. I want to be honest. Look, you may be right. However, that's a kind of take that sounds better as a soundbite. But if I look at the Billboard Hot 100 and it's moist, you're going to have a problem.
It's not moist.
I'm leaving this podcast.
Look at it. Look at it. Check the moisture level on the top in the top 10. It's dry.
You don't want to know what John thinks about Circles by Post Malone.
Anyway, my point is only that the thing that I loved about that performance, Karen, we were watching an artist who became famous, like whose entire thing is about coitus. It's pros and cons, it's implications, it's consequences. The risks worth taking to have it, to take that person who I identify quite reasonably, I would say, as a sexual artist and have him do a Prince tribute felt right to me. Now, the wrong parts are self-evident in that he is not, as John made clear to me when we talked about this earlier, he is not in any way princely. He is Michael Jackson-ly. And
that was me.
Oh, was that you? Sorry. Sorry. I mean, but we, okay.
Yeah,
you were correct. Thing. Joe, you were correct. And I just, it was great to see not just the conflation of Prince, Usher, Michael Jackson, but also it moved into this James Brown, Jackie Wilson territory. It was just the conflation of all these different sexes happening at the same
time. We should talk about the other
but you
carnal
have not answered
artist.
The question. You have not answered the question.
Oh, the jacket was terrible.
That's what I'm saying.
The pants.
There was extra
Usher,
material in the jacket. The pants, I likened it to a sleeping bag.
Usher is
earlier,
looking real
a cropped
thick.
Sleeping bag.
He's looking. He's not super thick, but he's gotten.
You were hot for Usher last night.
I was hot for Usher. I'll just say it. But can we talk about FKA Twigs?
Yeah, there was another carnal. There was another artist who specializes in the carnal.
She didn't do any jogging.
On stage last night, and FKA Twigs. I mean. There is a underground famous, infamous tweet about FKA Twigs, which is not suitable for air, but if you know, you know. Find the tweet about FKA Twigs and the sexual content of her music. I'll share it around the table after the podcast.
But she's
would
not,
you just say it and then we'll bleep it?
I mean,
I don't feel comfortable.
Oh my gosh.
Where is she on the charts?
She's not on the charts.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that no artists are having no sex.
I'm just saying she is someone who was invited to be part of this Prince tribute.
Yes.
Doing a thing that has become a specialty of hers in the last year, pole dancing.
Yes.
And yet, given the fact that this is the Grammys and this is CBS and the kind of people who watch it, she was not introduced as far as
I could
tell.
It was billed as FKA Twigs and Usher do a Prince tribute,
but
right?
Nobody showed
right, but
which
nobody
person was at FKA Twigs.
Yep.
And she did not sing.
If you were not aware of who FKA Twigs was prior
you're still
to
not
the
aware.
Event. Right. There was nothing to point you in that direction or suggest that the dancer in that performance was somehow also
a professional recorder, a Grammy nominated recorder.
But I did hear Sheila E., who was also part of this tribute, did say to USA Today, I don't know when she said it, but like after the performance, when everybody was like, well, why? How dare you set this thing up and like have her not perform? It's crazy to like have her just be a body and not a voice. And Sheila E. said, Sheila E. clarifying why FKA Twigs didn't sing. Sheila E. said she didn't want to.
Twigs said something
Twigs
a little separate.
She wasn't invited.
Twigs
said she did want to.
Oh.
Twigs tweeted and said, I would have loved to sing. I wasn't.
She said. Anyway,
next time I'll be asked, maybe.
I'm hoping for the post-Deborah Dugan reign that if you're going to do a Prince tribute, maybe you would have a woman sing it. Sing part of it. Maybe
and
well,
not
maybe
Janelle Monáe.
I was just about to say.
Yeah.
Or St. Vincent. Go on.
I would have loved to happened? Hear but I would have loved to hear Lizzo.
She gets plugged into a lot of these things. Lizzo would have been great.
I would have loved to hear Lizzo. I mean, this is, I mean, we
oh,
haven't.
Yeah.
And also, just to,
does Lizzo
sidebar,
have a Prince influence?
To sidebar yeah. just quickly to Wesley's point about sex, Lizzo is sex in pop. There is intent.
Oh,
no,
come on.
Just because it is not in the same framework as the music you're referring to does not mean it is not premised on sex.
No, but it's not, John. The thing about her that makes her such a star.
She don't even want a hoe no mo.
Right, but the thing about her is that body is not for that. She's not presenting herself as a sex object. The thing about the presentation is about the power of the body. It is not she's not offering herself up for sex.
But
what she's saying,
that
she's
is
like
a narrow view of what being sexual is.
I don't.
It's a narrow perspective.
It's not like
it
I have
is.
To. Like I'm not responding. I mean, I'm going to get orientationally dinged for saying this, but like I'm not responding to her as a sexual being. I'm responding
I think
to some
of people
other.
Are.
I'm not saying that you can't respond to her that way. I'm saying what's on offer. Is not immediately sexual. And the songs aren't sexual. The songs aren't sexual.
I agree.
What's sexual
with
about the songs?
I agree.
There's not one
too.
Song on that album.
It's
self-love. Without being overly serious, I think it's possible to be sexual
there's
and
nothing
humorous.
Carnal there's nothing carnal about her.
I think that it's a narrow read of what carnality can look like. And I do think one of the things that
but
I actually
no,
like
no, no,
about
no, take,
Lizzo.
Take back look like. Because now you're making it seem like I'm saying that like her... Like her
sound son. Like, feel
right.
like, be
I just,
like.
It is
yeah,
not
yeah, I don't
about,
mean look in a
okay,
literal
just,
sense.
Just so it's
yeah,
clear.
Yeah, no, that okay. is not a literal look. I think that's narrow. I think fundamentally, one of the things that Lizzo does that's interesting is expand the notion of how sexuality is presented in pop music. And I understand that it is not carnal in
I'm
the formal way that we would identify with Prince or something
like that.
She
clearly has
sexuality.
I'm just saying that it's hers to do what she wants to do with it. It's not, it doesn't function the way sexuality.
You're saying she's not flirting or seducing, but yeah, maybe she's
Lizzo
like demanding.
Music is for people who are not having sex.
Right. What?
I truly believe.
Why was this not in the round table?
Do you know what I'm saying about it?
You're saying your message I would be in the position of defending Liz. How have we gotten to the corner? I'm literally in the corner defending Liz. How did that happen?
I don't know.
I'm honestly
Let's
super surprised
Let's get back to the
to
Grammys, guys. Should okay, Lizzo have won
no,
more Grammys?
We are at war. Let's continue to be at war. No, this is fine. We're going to ride right out on warfare. Wesley, I know the real reason you're here. You're here because 2.5 hours ago, I stood next to your desk and we had a conversation about Gary Clark Jr.
Speaking of sex.
What?
Wow.
I'm sorry. You are not allowed to argue that Gary Clark Jr. represents carnality and Lizzo doesn't.
I'm just saying.
That's an invalid argument.
I'm Lizzo.
No. Wait, let me just get to the end of this.
Okay. Sorry.
No. We were talking about Gary Clark Jr. JP, you made Gary Clark Jr. one of your best. Now, I'm letting you off the hook momentarily. We'll come back to it.
Can't we be on the same hook?
They're different hooks. But y'all are going to come and watch me in about 30 seconds. So I'll just get this out of my system. Gary Clark Jr., what does Gary Clark Jr. do on the other 364 days of the year? So I don't totally understand that. And I've been trying to think about the career arc of Gary Clark Jr., who is a very talented guitar player, a songwriter of – he's an okay songwriter. He gets wheeled out by Ken Ehrlich, RIP, every year, almost every year, and this has become Gary Clark's public-facing presentation. And I think that there is value in it, but I have to wonder, when Gary Clark Jr. came into the game, did he imagine that his career arc would be shaped like this? And is this a particularly valid career arc? I struggle with it. He's there in the Ken Ehrlich cluster F at the end of the show. He did get his own standalone performance, although I feel that that was like a make good for like 25 years of being part of Grammy medleys.
You are really making him 90 years old.
I'm also making myself 90 years old. And then we were talking about this, and Wesley, you'd speak your piece.
I love Gary Clark Jr. I mean, it's just that simple.
Garrett, take it off mute.
I don't love Gary Clark Jr., but I feel you.
I just feel like, John, help me.
Okay,
first of
all,
you're talking about careers. What Gary Clark Jr. does the other 364 days is he goes and he plays and he burns down the house.
He tours.
He does festivals.
He does clubs.
He's a killer player. He was a killer player in Austin 100 years ago before he did his first.
You guys, he just keeps getting older
and
older.
He's like 32.
You guys, this is a young man for anybody who doesn't know about Gary Clark Jr.
Okay,
I love his 1880s record, personally.
But anyway,
I love his piano roles.
Part of this is, let's get back to Ken Ehrlich. Ken Ehrlich, for all of his flaws, really does love American roots music. He loves New Orleans music. He loves the blues. He may even love jazz, even though it hasn't been on the Grammys for a long time. He likes this stuff. Gary Clark Jr. is a handsome, young, killer musician who is embodying a tradition of Ken Ehrlich, does his best to wedge onto TV.
I totally get it, so, and I admire it when viewed from that angle. I find it admirable, but I also feel like, can you think of anything less progressive than just Gary Clark Jr. being defined by 20 seconds a year?
Yeah, but just because
like,
you only
kind
see
of like
him on TV.
Relative, I understand, but like in
your
the mainstream.
Your perspective is narrow, John.
I understand. I'm not disagreeing with you.
I've said this before, and I'm happy to hear JP say it.
I'm not disagreeing.
Plus, that song is such a good pissed-off song.
This Land, you're talking about. The title track.
The Grammy-winning title track.
The Grammy-winning title track from This Land.
From
John Perilous's Critics Pick review of the album of the same name.
JP, I apologize.
Go on.
Yeah. I did not read
but
it.
That song
I'm is, to be honest.
So
I read
that song is like totally Texas. I bought a ranch. My neighbors hate me because they're racist. The hell with them.
And but that is exactly the kind of song that if the Grammy Awards continues to be the Lil Nas X, Billie Eilish, Rosalia Grammys, you won't see those Gary Clark Jr. performances.
Right.
Because he is not a commercial concern, really. He's a, you know, like you said, he's a live musician. He's a festival musician. He is not a pop star.
No.
So do the Grammys need their Gary Clark Jr.'s, or are we moving into an age where we can do this show without them?
I would hate to see that not happen. Now, I will say, like, I'm sort of being categorical about my enthusiasm for Gary Clark Jr. I'm not crazy about This Land, the album that he put out last year. It's not my favorite of his three albums. Is it three
really?
Albums?
There's probably more independent label ones.
Well, I like the first major label.
As I said earlier, as many albums as Lil Pump. But an artist who's been around 110 years.
He's 35 for the record.
I did not like the Grammys performance that much. And I did find it unspeakably embarrassing to have him feature in that whatever the F at the end of the show for Ken Early.
Is that what we're doing? We're just going out on that?
We got to go out on it. Let's talk about
Why
it.
Why even dignify it?
Because
it happened. Because it happened.
And it's the most
Grammys
thing.
So many people
thing.
Got sucked into that canyon that opened up in the middle of the show.
No, but none of those people count.
So the Grammys were supposed to end at 11:30 p.m. 11:28 rolls around. We have two awards left, the two biggest awards of the night, record and album, which they keep swapping. This year, record came last, but it was a total afterthought because they spent 10 to 15 minutes
of real embarrassment
celebrating the 40-year career of Grammys producer Ken Ehrlich, who decided that as his swan song,
they framed it as Ken Ehrlich does not want to be honored on stage. He would like music in his honor.
So the song he chose, I'm told, comes from something called Fame.
Wait, are you... You're being silly, right?
No.
The lack of familiarity with the great Fame.
I know the name Fame. I'm not familiar with this...
it was the 40th anniversary song of Fame. But also,
we all want
to
live
here's
forever.
Here's the thing. There is a utopian aspect in Grammy
like Gary
moments.
Clark Jr.
Which is to say that the idea that music can bring us all together and it's a universal language and all idioms can speak to one another. This is the Ken Ehrlich Grammy moment philosophy.
So
that schlocky, horrible Fame song, it's a little bit classical. It's a little bit rock and roll.
But JP,
it's a little bit
like,
ballet.
If you were like
it's perfect for the Grammy moment
and
mentality.
If you were like a savvy young 23, 26-year-old, whatever, who was musically inclined, would you watch that performance and would your takeaway be, wow, all these styles of music really do get along together? No.
But
no, you'd be like, this is absolute bonkers nonsense.
They weren't getting
along.
It
was bonkers in 1982.
Just to tie it all together, a thing that I did not write in my notebook but has really been on my mind about the Old Town Road group performance.
Which was great.
But here's why it's good. So there's a version of that song that BTS is on, or at least one of the guys from BTS. There's a version of that song with Mason Ramsey and Young Thug. And then there's the main one with Billy Ray Cyrus. And I was thinking a lot about what artists
have... I forgot about Diplo.
Never heard of him. but I've been thinking a lot about what we used to expect of artists who were quote-unquote crossing over, or who were attempting to work in multiple spaces. And what we used to ask of them is to compromise, to smooth out, to flatten their styles. And the Old Town Road multiplicity of remixes is a great example of people crossing spaces without fundamentally sacrificing the thing that they do well. They did not ask BTS to do something other than BTS stuff on that stage. Well, lightly, but not generally. But broadly speaking, they did not ask Mason Ramsey to do something other than Mason Ramsey. And whoever wrote the line, if you ain't got no giddy up, then giddy out my way, that person needs a Pulitzer. Sidebar. They didn't ask Young Thug if he would have shown up to do anything other than what Young Thug does. And I think that is an interesting
model. They didn't even ask him to show up.
And that is an interesting model of collaboration, especially in the streaming era, when fundamentally people are being met on their own terms at the level of the fan interaction. And when I saw that, not to be all Ken Ehrlich, RIP to you, but when I saw that, I thought, you know what? This is actually a Grammy moment because it's a lot of people acting on their own terms, coming together for a one-of-a-kind performance that people actually want to see, as opposed to whatever Common and effing Lang Lang we're doing at 11:47 p.m.
It just, there was a moment where, like, I was watching that and Common, God love him, came out, changed his clothes, by the way, for that, and both me and my friend were like, oh my God, it's Common!
Was he doing his AI monologue? Is that what that was?
It was crazy. You remember like This Is the End, where like the earth sort of swallows Rihanna? It was one of those things where like, oh my God, Common just fell in too. But you'll notice who wasn't a part of that. Like nobody—
Anyone relevant?
Right, this is right, exactly.
Can I just read all the names?
Camila.
Ben Platt, Cyndi Lauper, John Legend, Joshua David Bell, Debbie Allen, Misty Copeland. First of all, Misty Copeland, how is Misty Copeland in this, but not in the ballerina section of the Lizzo performance? If we're really going to be putting Misty Copeland.
I mean.
Save it. Camila Cabello, Gary Clark the Ninth, Lang Lang, The War and Treaty, Lee Carrieri. I don't know who that is.
Oh, he's from Fame. He played Bruno. That was Bruno on Fame. There's this
literally
crazy moment where the camera goes to Bruno, and it's like, oh, it's Bruno.
Okay, I tuned that part out. And Common. So anyway, the final Grammy moment, Ken Ehrlich's swan song, Don't Let the Door Hit You on the Way Out. I don't even know what to say. We're really going to make the people listen to this at the end of the show?
Lil Nas X.
Mason Ramsey.
Mason Ramsey. I almost wore my Mason Ramsey t-shirt today. I was really thinking about it. Should we go out on Mason Ramsey? Or do you want to make people listen to the Demi Lovato song?
Oh, no.
She sounded great.
But come on. That's the song of a Star Search winner. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
She's
going through a hard time, Wesley.
But Karen... But I object to the premise of the song, which that nobody is listening to. How many Twitter followers and Instagram followers does she have?
But did anyone hear her?
That's not what that song's about.
That's like the Google Doc note when you like change something back that I've changed. I'm like, has anybody heard me?
I don't know, Karen.
Did you just say, has anybody hear me?
I didn't sleep a lot.
We're going out on Pedro singing The Body Electric. That is where we're ending. It's been great. I'll take us out. This has been Popcast. I sing The Body Electric. I celebrate the me to come. I toast to my own reunion.
That is our show. Thank you to Joe, to Karen, to JP, to Wesley. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us your Grammy thoughts if you made it to the end of the show at podcast@nytimes.com.
We owe you a t-shirt if you made it to the end
of this.
Yeah,
that's true. We'll make t-shirts.
There's a podcast t-shirt?
We're making them.
Oh, because I want
one. You'll get one. As soon as I figure it out. Subscribe to Popcast anywhere you got your audio content, which would not be on CBS, because if you got your audio content from CBS, you're a lady.
Are you really trying to get us canceled or something?
Canceled from CBS?
I don't know.
If it makes more room for Bob Hart's Abishola, that's fine. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week.